This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Paul Levins, who's the Chief Strategy Officer for Zenova. G'day, Paul.
G'day, Alan. How are you going?
Now, you're Australian, obviously. You're based in Sydney. Zenova is a company based in Seattle. But you're the Chief Strategy Officer, not the Australian head. Is that fair to say?
That's right. Yeah. So I spend a good chunk of my time on a plane, usually a Qantas plane, I spend a lot of that time in the US and in Asia. So the head office is based in Seattle, and we've got offices in all the other bits of Asia that you might expect.
So the Zenova website is a very interesting place. You go there and you get these things called requests for innovation, they're like auctions. So open, closing in 4 days, point of use water purification, it says. Zenova seeks the disclosure of inventions for removal of particulates, blah, blah, blah. So it's actually calling for inventions. And then another part of the site has got published solutions. So explain this to us,
yeah,
Paul.
Well, look,
how does it work?
Yeah, look, Zenova is essentially what's now known as a market network for innovation. So a market network, as the name suggests, is a kind of a marriage between a traditional market and some of the key elements of networks that have grown up, particularly online networks that have grown up over the last 10 years. And the marriage of those two things is valuable because it allows you to have a commercial focus, but it also allows a whole lot of people to participate in the creation of an innovation of high value. So you bring your own personal network, networks that you trust, people who you know can deliver. And so the tasks that the network gets asked to look at tend to be of higher value and much more subjective in the sort of outcome. So if you think of Uber, I caught an Uber here, that's a pretty objective assessment about whether they've succeeded or not. The car's clean, the driver didn't swear at you and you got to your destination, This is a far more complex sophisticated and, I would say, subjective process. So a client will come to us and say, look, we want to innovate in a certain space. Let's say that's a problem that they can't solve. And some of those things that you called out looking at the site are examples of those. And we'll distribute that to the network. And it's, as I said, a curated network. It's not a crowd sourced network in the sense that perhaps regular open innovation models are. And the network responds with solutions, or it might be existing technologies that they're aware of, or it might be brand new solutions that they've devised. And then we work with the customer who's commissioned that that request or that piece of work to be able to work out if it's commercial and if they can implement it.
So tell us how the money works.
Yeah, how the money works is that we like to describe Zenova as a sort of a risk share platform. So everyone who participates in a transaction is sharing some element of the risk. So, for example, we will co-develop the solutions that come from the network with our partners. So we will go, share the cost of the prototyping activity. We will share the cost of sourcing the innovation in the first instance. So we will get paid, but we're wearing some of the cost of finding that solution, and we'll get paid by the customer in order to devise that solution and to define the problem on their behalf and so on. And then if we're successful, if we agree as partners that it's something that is commercial, that can be implemented, that will truly innovate, then we are paid essentially a licensing fee to be able to take that idea and develop it, and then also share the upside of the revenues.
But who owns the idea?
So that can be flexible. So the idea can be owned by us, because what that allows is for us to go and look for other market opportunities rather than just keeping the intellectual property as a defensive mechanism. If you see what I mean. So rather, ordinarily a company might own the IP because they want to avoid being sued. But there's an enormous amount of value to be mined there, because you can actually take, and more often than not, an innovation is valuable in another sector. So if you can license that for use in another sector, you've generated a revenue stream that you can share with the customer. And so in some circumstances...
What about the individual inventor who's come up with who's responded to the request?
Yep.
Do they own it, or do they participate in the ownership?
They do. They participate in the revenue stream. So they'll get paid a fee when if we select it for discussion with the partner, with the customer. They get paid then again if we decide, if the party has agreed to proceed, and then they get a share of the revenues that we generate out of the total proposition. So the best of the best innovators, if you like, show up to this network because they back themselves in and they believe that, you know, the value they add, they're prepared to take a risk up front on a lower amount, a lower selection amount, because of the enormous possibilities of the upside that's generated from the innovation.
So how much money are we talking about? Are there standard fees or is it case by case?
They tend to be standard fees, and each one of those is sort of commercial in confidence, depending on the provider and the customer.
Right, but can an inventor make a living from this?
Absolutely, and I can point you to.
Or is it just every now and again they come up with something? Or can they
no, these
invent all the time and use your network like Uber drivers use Uber.
Yeah, that's right. That is a great example and a great way of relating that latter point, which is that, you know, I can point you to examples of innovators who have set up small businesses. 10, 12 people. Off the back of the work that they're doing, because it's not just ideating, it's innovating all the way through. So they'll come up with an idea, or they'll find a technology that they think is applicable, an existing technology, and then they'll do the prototyping work, and then they may well consult with the end customer as well. And so we moderate all that, if you like, or coordinate all that, Zenova does. And as a consequence, as you say, the best of the best tend to show up because they have this, they're backing themselves in. They have this revenue stream, a large potential upside revenue stream that they're able to tap if their idea is successful. It's a little bit like, I sometimes use the example that it's a little bit like Hollywood in the 1930s. So, you know, if you went back in a time machine to that era, you'd discover that, people were being paid, actors were being paid a salary and they were told what to work on. And then the agency model comes along and suddenly they're able to say, well, I don't want to work on crime. I want to work on romance. And what's more, I don't want to be paid a salary. I want a share of the box office. And so that's a little bit analogous to what it is that what the experience is like for the innovators within this very big global network that's now got, 115 countries represented in it.
Tell us a bit about the history of this business, because I think it started as Intellectual Ventures, which was in turn founded by a couple of blokes from Microsoft, Nathan Myhrvold and Edward Jung. So, but is Zenova renamed Intellectual Ventures, or is it a spin-off from it?
No, it's a completely separate business to Intellectual Ventures. So it started, Zenova in fact started as a business within Intellectual Ventures called the Innovation Development Fund. And it was, in a sense, a model that was a precursor to where we've got to. It built a network, which we still rely upon, but it was very heavily intellectual property focused, whereas our business now is very solutions and commercially focused from a point of view of getting a product into a marketplace. So, you know, the experience through the Invention Development Fund was that particularly if you're wanting to have that more commercial angle, you know, you can take a piece of IP to a business, and it can be very well protected, and it might be incredibly, you know, a great breakthrough from a technological point of view. But a business, understandably, will still say, "Well, come back to me when you've at least got a prototype or a proof of concept, and we can start to talk turkey." So, it made a lot more sense for us to get to start the other way around. So to work with businesses to say, well, what issues are you having from an innovation point of view, and how can we help and be aligned with your business imperatives to be able to get to the end result and have a product on a shelf and create, you know, an internal rate of return and an ROI and all those good things. And so, yes, its origins were there, but it's a completely separate business now. One of the founders of IB.
Owned by the same people?
No, it's not owned by the same people. It's now an LLC, a limited liability company, that has separate and private investors and new investors. And the only remaining link was that the guy who founded IDF, founded Invention Development Fund, a guy called Edward Jung, who, as you said, was the head of Microsoft Research. And, you know, the 10th is now, I think, the 12th most successful inventor of all time is now the CEO. So he's left Intellectual Ventures altogether and to become our CEO. And other people have arrived too in the spirit of this, the best show up discussion we were having earlier. You know, a guy called Jorma Ollila is now our executive chairman. Who's Jorma? He was the CEO and chairman of Nokia through all its growth years and was up until quite recently the chairman of Royal Dutch Shell globally.
So is there some kind of inventors league table, is there, that this guy Edward Jung, as you call him, is number what, 10 on it?
Yeah, I think he's number 12, so let's not promote him too quick.
Number 12 on the all-time inventors league table.
Yeah, that's right, yes. And so this is by... So this is by order of patent. So if you look at the number of patents that people have filed over time, excuse me, you're then able to do a ranking of people successful. In fact, I think the most successful inventor of all time is in fact an Australian, and I'm blanking on his surname. Kai.
Who is it?
I'm blanking on his surname. Kai. We'll have to go back and check, but he's actually based in a place out of Balmain here in Sydney.
Goodness me. Well, that's pretty interesting.
I wish I could remember his surname.
I've learned something.
Before we end the interview, we might be able
to find him.
Yeah, I will remember it. It'll come back to me. But before we end the interview, I'll get his surname.
We've ended the interview. That's it.
I thought we were going to talk about innovation in Australia. not to worry. Another time.
There isn't any, is there?
Well, you know, look, one of the extraordinary things is that, you know, we observe this stuff, right, internationally. Extraordinary things is that somehow we think that if we give people a whole lot of tax breaks, that somehow that's going to magically turn us into Silicon Valley. You know, we've got 256 state and territory innovation programs and 83 federal ones. And in spite of that, and in fact, you know, we've got the second highest share of tax support for business R&D in the OECD. The US is way behind that at 28. Yet the number of startups, you know, per billions of R&D spend are way below the OECD average. So what does that tell you? So what it tells you is that we're, the best form of innovation comes from demand. That's how Silicon Valley, in fact, started. State-sponsored demand, right? We're going to go to the moon. Not because it's easy, because it's hard. And in many respects, the US is still living off that. And it's resulted in everything from non-stick frying pans to the internet, you know. So that's true innovation, and that's the sort of direction I think that we need in the country.
That's very interesting. And unfortunately, we do have to leave it there. It's been great talking to you, Paul. Thanks.
Good on you. Thanks, Alan. All the best.
I've been talking to Paul Levins, who's the Chief Strategy Officer for Zinnova, Xinova.